This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. With me this week is Greg Miller.
Wang Wangs.
Anthony Gallegos is here.
Yep.
And joining us for the first time in a long time is Tina Palacios.
I don't think I've ever joined you guys.
Okay, so I remembered you've been on Knocking Boots.
Yes.
But this is actually your first GameScoop appearance. Well, then welcome to our legitimate podcast.
So we don't talk about sex on this one.
We can totally talk about sex, okay. if that's sex. What people want to talk about.
Let's talk about sex, baby.
Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex. What's that line in there? Why she's like, hey, how many men you know make love?
I don't remember that.
Like, there's like
yeah,
a talking
like,
part
talk in there.
In there.
Right? Yeah.
Anyway.
Why the powder face?
Because he's Anthony. This is what he does.
That's true.
Really? Nothing to say for yourself?
I don't know the words to that song.
That's fine.
Really?
Well, do you want to just get to the news then? Mm-hmm. Just get right down to business?
Mm-hmm. What are the scoops this week, Hatfield?
Well, the biggest scoop this week is happening right down the street from us at Double Fine's offices.
Probably
the millionaire offices of Double Fine Incorporated.
Who knew? All this time, they could have been making any game they wanted to. All they had to do is just ask people to give them money. Double Fine are the makers of games such as Brutal Legend, Stacking,
Costume Quest,
and Trenched, whatever the new name of that is.
Psychonauts wasn't technically made by Double Fine.
Double Fine came after that. But yeah, still. Tim Schafer's development company. They just put out a happy action theater,
correct.
Right, for Kinect,
correct.
Downloadable Kinect game. Mm-hmm. And so their pedigree, Tim Schafer's pedigree, and his good friend Ron Gilbert is old school adventure games, point-and-click adventures.
Most famously Monkey Island.
Mm-hmm. And
Full Throttle.
They wanted
Full
to make
good.
Another one, but that's a hard sell with publishers these days.
Kids want the modern warfares and the shooters. Get out of here, Schafer. You'll never work in this town again.
That's what I imagine.
That was John Ricciatello from EA. So they decided, you know, well, we want to make a point-and-click adventure game, but we need the money for it. So they started a Kickstarter campaign. This went up on Wednesday?
Yeah, just like...
And they asked for $400,000. Yeah.
In a month. They wanted $400,000 in a month.
And they tripled that in a day.
Yeah.
They have over $1 million now.
Yeah.
So they're going to make their point-and-click adventure game.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I think it's pretty cool, right?
Yeah, it's totally cool.
I want to know how this conversation started at Double Fine.
So the way I got the impression that it started...
You talked to Tim Schafer.
Yeah.
Yesterday.
He's your homeboy.
Was that it started as an... Originally, like, these two-player production guys came to them. And we're like,
what does that mean?
Two-player productions is a video company.
Oh, okay.
And they were like, "We want to make
what?
We
do know
they make a lot of video game
stuff. If you ever caught the Uncharted, the making of Uncharted's debut trailer, Uncharted 3's debut trailer for the VGAs or whatever, they did a whole behind the scenes leading up to it and afterwards, and it was really, really
and
well
so
done.
They originally were like, "We just want to do a documentary about Double Fine, and we want to kickstart it." And so then the guys at Double Fine were like, "Well, how about we make it two things? We make it a Kickstarter to fund the documentary, which is partially what all this money is making as well.
I see.
But also we make a game out of it. See if we can fund a game as
well." So originally they wanted $400,000, right? $100,000 was supposed to go towards these guys making the documentary, and then $300,000 towards the game. So
exactly. So
the fuck are they going to do with the rest of the money?
Well, I mean, obviously, he said that there are a bunch of things that they wanted to do, whether it was adding voice, because voice sessions are like $2,000 an hour, you know, or it's just, you know, making...
Not if they pay us to do it.
That's true.
We'll do it for free right here.
Yeah.
Tim, we got a whole setup right here.
Making it multi-platform.
Oh my god, why did you click on the toaster?
Making it multi-platform is basically what they're going to do at this point now. And, you know, probably maybe have music that isn't just like... I mean, we all would like 8-bit music, but maybe they'll have scored music. Who knows what they'll do at this point, you know?
It's exciting.
Yeah.
So, like, $300 to make the game. They projected this is what it's going to cost them to make the game, right? But they already have...
$300,000.
Yeah, you're right. Sorry, $300,000. They already have, we presume, the equipment that it would require to make a video game. So that's to pay their salaries while they make the game, I guess?
I'd imagine, right? Salary, asset stuff,
It's to
whatever.
Have dedicated staff to it, because that's what the staff would be doing. They would not be working on the other games that Double Fine is making, which they definitely are. I mean, they're always making multiple games at once.
Mm.
So, you know, and probably also $300,000 to cover prize fulfillment, because they are giving prizes. Kickstarter also takes 10%, if I remember right, off of whatever you get. So that's why they promote it so heavily too, because Kickstarter is like, fuck yeah, we're making $100,000.
Not only
these
is
guys.
This unprecedented for like a game developer, and we'll wait for whenever Tina's ready to continue the podcast.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Tina doesn't know podcast rules.
You're right. I'm sorry.
The rules were not
clearly explained to you at the beginning.
No, I'm sorry.
Also, it's okay. So not only have to do prize fulfillment, but they also have to pay people, obviously, documentary fees, and then there are also probably certain costs associated with
taxes,
putting it on Steam.
Stuff, yeah.
Any sort of advertisements they want to do with it, which is what they'll probably do. I don't know at this point. Maybe.
How much it is to put a game up on like Xbox or PlayStation?
Well, Xbox, we talked about this during the morning meeting briefly. Xbox, you need a publisher. You can, unless you wanted to go like IndieCade or whatever. Whereas PlayStation, you could self-publish.
Yeah, and I don't know that it costs necessarily money to put it onto Sony as much as like they take X amount.
And getting it, they have a development.
And I think on XBLA, it's more like an application. Like fee, like
there are certain things that has to do. It has to have 200 achievement points that builds into it. You know, things. Yeah.
We've talked about this before. That's actually it's part of the reason why XBLA I think is a better service. But then I think it can be frustrating for developers.
Yeah,
on their
if it was my guess, I would say that when this game comes out in October, which is like their projected release, you'll be playing it on iOS, PC, and probably PlayStation.
They must
like,
have had
I don't
this
know.
Thing laid out before they even put up the Kickstarter.
I mean, Ron Gilbert has been with the company for several months now, and he hasn't worked on anything, so what has he been working on?
Well,
probably
I
laying out an adventure game.
I assume he's probably been working on stuff.
Obviously, but I'm saying laying out...
Bouncing a tennis ball off the wall.
But I'm saying what has he been working on? He's probably been laying out like the pre-production for an adventure game. So...
Damien, you were leading up before you were rudely interrupted by Tina's texting. This is unprecedented both for games and Kickstarter.
And Kickstarter,
this is the most money Kickstarter has ever raised.
Yeah, that's what I'm told.
Typically, when I look at Kickstarter, which I do from time to time, like documentaries and stuff, right? They have like a Pitchfork sponsored section. Pitchfork often sponsors documentaries, and most of them are asking
Pitchfork,
for like
the music site.
The music site Pitchfork. They have like curated like. Certain companies will come in and curate Kickstarters that they think are worthwhile. You know, and Kickstarter will do music ones, but they'll also do documentaries about, like, totally non-music related things. Just things they think are cool. And most of the documentaries, which are usually the most expensive ones, like $50,000. I saw one that was, like, $20,000 for a guy that was trying to make illuminated sunglasses.
Yes.
But only the people...
What does that mean?
Okay, so picture these. They're actually pretty cool. It is sunglasses where if you were DJing and people were looking at you, you would have like red glowing lenses, but you would not see any glow. Only the people looking at you see the glow. You see normal out of them.
Okay,
I like that, Damon.
I'm gonna go fund this.
Go fund that Kickstarter.
If I fund it, does that get me a free pair?
It gets you a pair, and it's already funded at this point.
Oh,
it's so.
What's so weird about this thing is that originally it came up as an afterthought on the Twitter after Tim Schafer's like, nobody will let us make Psychonauts 2. And Notch from Minecraft was like, oh, I'll fund Psychonauts 2 if you want.
Yeah, and he's got plenty of money.
Well, we're talking to Notch now, but also something's coming, and then this was what it was.
Yeah, I mean, Notch has a ton of money. He just, their Mojang's moving into a whole new office in Sweden, and...
Did you ask Tim about Psychonauts 2?
Yeah, and he said, well, he said that as far as Notch making a game, he said that he talked to him, and Notch is definitely serious about it. And so ultimately, if Notch wants to give them money, they will do something interesting with it. As well,
it's an interesting time right now.
I know. It's really, really cool. Now, Tina, you donated too.
Yes.
The Double Fine Adventure, thereby foregoing any credibility you have as a game media professional.
That kind of pissed me off that happened. It was former colleagues of ours, by the way, Anthony.
So I told Tina is that, not to interrupt you, I'm just saying, in principle, I can understand it, right? Because when people hear about it without looking at what you get, it's like you think you're, oh, so you're directly investing in a game. But the difference with Kickstarter, is that you're getting goods and services from it. So you are basically just pre-ordering. That's all you're doing.
Oh, you get the game for free if you donate?
You do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
that's I haven't actually looked at the bonuses for this.
That's what I'm saying. It's not, principally wise, these people were looking at it thinking, like, this is just the same as owning stock in 2K or something, but it's not.
It's not.
You're buying the game.
We had this discussion. I'm going to get profit from it. Like, they're not going to give me a check later.
You're
like,
not an investor.
It's not an investment. It's commerce. It's just a sale.
Exactly. Right? You are just promised goods and services.
We had this big argument in our morning meeting. Colin Moriarty is like the one person who doesn't like this Kickstarter idea for Double Fine. Yeah, I don't know why.
I don't want to go down this road because he's not here to defend himself for what the hell
happened. That's fine. You're right. Yeah. But basically, you're basically just buying a copy of the game, which we buy games.
Right? Or if you donate more, you're getting stuff like shirts. If you donate a really ton of money...
Well, I mean, pulling back to Tina doesn't review games. Tina doesn't generally. What's the last game you reviewed?
Modern Warfare 3.
What I'm talking about for IGN, fuck one up. I don't care what the hell happens over there.
No, I don't review. Anyways, I never, go on Twitter to go on like a political rant or anything like that. I never try to like.
You should. I'd love to hear your political rant.
But I don't know. I just wanted to support like a company that was going to make a game, for a genre that hardly exists nowadays.
You and 40,000 other people.
Yeah. So I felt like really good about it, and then like other people that Anthony and I used to work with like tried to make me feel like shit indirectly by saying like I'm disappointed in my former colleagues.
Again, it's because I think it's because those people were totally ignorant of what Kickstarter is. Like they didn't understand that. Kickstarter is promising goods and services.
But then why even say anything or accuse me of something?
Because
if you don't
Twitter is where people do knee-jerk reactions like dummies. That is what they do.
That's true.
But if you want to be in the industry as a journalist, you should probably know fucking better.
I mean,
go down the rabbit hole of are we still journalists? What are we doing?
I think we all have had stupid knee-jerk reactions.
Yeah, exactly. No, and that's the whole thing. And that's why journalists would sit down and get all the facts and gather it and write an objective piece, whereas we are critics and we are critiquing things.
Sorry, game critics.
No, don't be. I think it's an ongoing discussion as to what we are. I don't think I'm right necessarily.
I've never considered myself a journalist, but I know that Colin Campbell, head of our news and features team, does.
Yeah.
So,
I've read a couple articles where I felt like, oh, I'm a journalist.
The last piece of journalism I did was years ago when Jeff Haynes and Dunham and Roper were still here, and I called a graphics company in France and spoke French to them to figure out if they had purposely...
Are you serious?
Yeah, if they
you
were purposely... not well. Like, the first thing was like, parlez-vous anglais? And then they're like, oh, my God. They were making this. Well, no, but I had to. In the beginning, it was the blah 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 blah. Because I had to get through the switchboard to get to the guy to get to the thing.
Okay,
but anyways, to figure out if they were trying. If you remember this mushroom cloud for a PlayStation 3 that looked like a clown, we were all trying to figure out if it was Twisted Metal, and so I was able to track it back to this French production company. But that was like the last thing I ever did. That was like a real news story. Everything else now is like, man. If you were waiting for this game, too bad, it's delayed! I got it from the PlayStation blog. I'm gonna go play video games now. Talk to you later. Watch my show and start.
Well, the Double Fine Adventure Kickstarter is open until March 13th. So
yeah, it's funny, just to go back to when I talked
how
to Tim yesterday, he said in day one he was like, I was hoping we would raise like $2,000. That's like what he was hoping day one. Yeah.
Aww.
What's so interesting about it is what does this mean for the rest of game developers and stuff like that? Like, you figure we always talk about Double Fine and frame it in the way of like everybody loved Psychonauts and everybody loves Grim Fandango, but like they try to put those games out. We put out Brutal Legend. Brutal Legend doesn't sell, so they start doing all these little downloadable games. But even downloadable games aren't making money. And now you're seeing this avenue of, sure, downloadable games don't, you know, Custom Quest didn't probably break the bank for anybody, but if fans fund the games they want, what does it matter anymore? If they can sustain, right, like, by, you know, doing that, what does that mean?
Social networks definitely help with that. Like, when Felicia Day, who has over, like, almost 2 million followers, is tweeting about your Kickstarter and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, completely changes the way that works.
So do big publishers like EA and Activision and Ubisoft, do they look at this and they think, oh, there is a demand for point-and-click adventures? Or they just say, well, no, this is just a viable business model for, you know, this is how they
think it's a viable business model to sell for. This is just what makes sense for that, right?
Yeah, a viable business model, because honestly, like, even if EA were to fund it, like, and it only sold 40,000 copies, it would be considered a failure, probably. Like,
that's a good point, because we can see the total amount of money that's been raised, but how many donors are there?
Like, close to 40,000.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's how many copies they've sold, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And they'll sell some more after it's released, but, you know, not millions more. You know?
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. So,
but that's really cool, like, on-demand gaming, right? Like,
I know.
I love Tim Schafer games. I love adventure games. Here's my money, and I will, you know, I get the game. That's
can
cool.
you really imagine any other independent developer doing this?
Well, no, especially not in the way they've done it. Like, other companies, when they do Kickstarter for their game, they're like, here's a trailer. It's already being made. Help me finish this.
Yeah.
And they're just like, we're going to make a game. You don't know anything about it.
I know, right? So you just know that in the past we've made really awesome point-and-click adventure games.
Exactly, yeah. You have to have a dedicated fan base that knows who you are and knows what's up.
Yeah.
Yay.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Moving on. There of course, rumors that the next Xbox may or may not lock out used games, the play of used games, right? We're all up to speed with this.
I'm aware of this.
A developer for Saints Row the Third thinks this is a fantastic idea.
Uh-huh.
He really likes this idea. Actually, and his arguments, I thought were actually pretty smart.
Okay. Wait, mommy.
Yeah, so for the first time, I could totally see his point and see how maybe that could possibly work and not be the end of the world as we know it. So you buy a new copy of a game, and there's a code in there that you have to enter. It basically attaches it to that console. So anyone else in your family can play it on that console. Mm. And then if you want to lend it, this guy's name is, what's this guy's name? Jameson Durrell. Durrell. He says, Microsoft could implement something similar to what Amazon is doing with their Kindle books lending policy. Is anybody familiar with this and how that works?
When it's lent out, you can't look at it, and then when you get it back, you can.
Interesting. That kind of makes sense.
I'm asking if that's what it is.
Oh,
I don't know.
Oh, I thought you were telling us that
this works. Is something PC games do all the time, right? Like, when DC Universe came out, if you bought it on a PC, you could give your disc and the friend code to somebody, and the friend, I forget how long they got to try it out.
14 days or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that.
Hmm. Like, it's just, this is something PC gaming's been doing for a while. Not just this, but I mean, used games in general has been doing for a while. And now it's just like console gamers are flipping their wigs because they don't understand what it means.
We also have a good explanation for how renting games could work. He says, I could see Microsoft implementing their own rental service, which would maybe give them a code that activates the game for X amount of days, and then they're charged a small amount. This could work when you borrow the disc from someone, or even with digital downloads of the full version. Mm-hmm. We'd also send a percentage of the rental to the developer with each rental, improving the overall revenue we would receive from it.
Yeah, so I mean, I imagine a lot like movie rentals already work on Xbox Live.
Yeah. You know,
does that mean they're going to send us a shit ton of games now because we can't share?
What do you mean?
I'm just kidding. Mm. You know, when publishers send you copies of the game to play.
Yeah.
No, you'll still get the two. We'll still scrounge for two copies.
Yeah, we'll hand consoles over to other people.
Yeah. Can I take your Xbox, your next box home tonight?
He ends with something I don't know I agree with. He says, we have to do something about these issues. He's meaning, used games.
Yeah.
Or our industry is going to fall apart. That I don't, like, renting games has been around as long as games have been. So, like, what, or used games have, you know?
Yeah.
For 30 years.
Yeah.
And only now it's a matter of dire importance.
Well, I figure the
industry's going to fall apart.
Well, budget for games keep going up.
Okay.
Like, it costs more and more to make a game. So if the revenue stream isn't changing to accommodate for the fact of how much it costs to make a game, then game prices start to go up, which drive away consumers on some level.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, what we've been talking about forever. I mean, I feel like I've had an argument with everybody about this.
Is that you get to the point where
you get to where it's Activision and EA can make whatever the fuck they want, and then the little guy can make the independent game like Papo and Yo and get it up on the PlayStation Network, and then there's no middle ground anymore for people to do stuff unless they have a Kickstarter and approve it in Tim Schafer.
Or unless they're on the PC. Like, the PC's like the only place. iPhone
games, and all that stuff. Yeah, yeah, the stuff where you can just make it. You buy the $100 Apple program and then make whatever you want.
Can we just go digital already? Just across the board?
Completely?
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you think?
I think we're ways off from that. But yeah. I know that a lot of those feel. I just don't want media.
I just feel like it would solve all these problems.
Yeah,
it would. Yeah,
yeah, for us, though,
but like not everybody. Yeah. That's the, you know, how many times do we get emails from kids saying like, you know, you guys always say this, but I live here and I don't have broadband and yada yada yada. It seems like that happens a lot.
How many people? Does that seem weird to not?
No, for us it's not.
How many people out there?
I'm so grumpy that I have all these stupid Vita cards. I'm like, fuck this. Can they all go to the store already? I want
to
buy them.
Problem to have.
I know, right? I know. Oh, stupid cartridges.
Fucking games.
God, I'm carrying all this shit with me.
Yeah. I'm ready for all digital. I've been ready for a long time.
I am curious to know, though, like how negative of an effect does like a company like GameStop have on developers?
Yeah.
Like, would there be as many layoffs? Because of used game sales.
Because of selling used games.
I'm sure that
it's
there's...
It's so sleazy, too, because they're like, new, $60, used,
$48. Yeah. But no, it's more like $55.
Yeah.
They're not the $5 off that price.
I'm sure that there are some developers where, like, they were so close to making back the bottom line that it used game sales hurt
them.
And
then they had to lay off, like, 10 people.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know that it happens all that often.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I was talking to David Jaffe about this last week, and his response pretty much was like, yeah, it sucks, but whatever, it's all going to end soon. Like, he's more on the Damon camp of, like, whatever.
Yeah, eventually, David Jaffe's in the Damon camp.
That's what he said, too. I'm representing Damon!
I saw him in a Twisted Metal commercial on YouTube.
My Truck?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
He's good on camera.
Oh, he's great on camera. Yeah, he's awesome.
You can see him on camera on the Up and New with Greg Miller show.
Yeah, episode 2.
It's on YouTube now.
Yeah, well, go watch it now. YouTube.com.
Not right now. Wait, finish listening to the show first.
Then watch next Game Boss. Then you can go about your business after you watch those two shows.
Last week, we were talking about true crime Hong Kong. Yeah. And you were mentioning how you got an invite.
I got an invite, but it didn't say True Crime Hong Kong.
It didn't say what it was.
It didn't name the game, but I knew it had United Front Games on there, so I knew it was up. Mm-hmm. What did we find out?
This is the one that Square sent out, ticket passes. Okay.
Well, yeah, Square has announced a game called Sleeping Dogs.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm excited.
Which takes place in Hong Kong.
Wait a second. Who makes it?
Whatever developer you said.
Yeah, Front Games. Wait a second. That's the same game.
Yeah.
It just got such terrible previews and such a bad taste when it got canceled, they thought they could change the name to something really obscure that no one will care about, and no one would know. But we cracked the code, guys.
Are they trying to be coy about it? Or?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think they were pretty upfront about it.
Yeah, this is what True Crime Hong Kong used to be.
Yeah.
Now it's a game called Sleeping Dogs. It's an open world cop drama.
Yeah, all right. Let's see what this one's all about.
supposed to come out in the second half of this year. PS3, 360, and PC.
All right. I predict it gets delayed.
I can already tell you what the strapline of that review is going to be when it gets a 5.5 from IGN.
Should have
let Sleeping Dogs lie. Yeah, that's what it's going to be. I'm out.
So when is this event? When are you going to see this game?
Well, I hope I'm not seeing it, but on the 15th of this month, I think.
So just next week, right?
A fall Wednesday. I gave it to Casey to see if he could sign up.
Okay.
We'll see. I should check it out. I like Mod Nation Racers from United Front, so maybe this is more like Mod Nation Racers.
Did you guys not
Racers.
Like Stranglehold? Didn't that take place in Hong Kong?
It's not the setting we're against.
I know.
Another Hong Kong game.
Stranglehold was okay when it came out. It had some moments of fun.
Can you think of a game set in Asia, starring an Asian protagonist that has performed well in North America?
Asia with Asia.
Onimusha.
Onimusha didn't do that bad. That's true.
Yeah, I'm just thinking. There's not very many.
No, yeah, yeah.
Interesting setting.
Jade Empire.
That might be a hard sell for
Jade
some
Empire.
People.
Jade Empire. 9.9 IGN.
You're saying Americans don't like Asians.
I'm just saying. I don't know that Americans. I mean,
it's pretty clear. Americans like white males with shaved heads.
If you look at what most protagonists look like, they're white dudes. You know, I don't know. Just an observation. Resident Evil Revelations came out this week on the 3DS.
I want it.
Complete with misspelled title on the
Revelations.
Title on the spine. Revelations. Revelations. Capcom.
Someone just doesn't care at their office.
I know, right? Capcom will be correcting that. First of all, the next shipment of the game will feature the correct spelling.
So buy the one now and don't open it. Collectors
and then fans who buy this version can request a replacement insert from Capcom.
Cool.
There's a phone number you can call. 650-350-6700. That's the Capcom customer service line.
Just put up as a PDF I can print.
I like that it's not even a 1-800 number. I know, it's San Mateo. That's just where they are.
Some poor person is sitting there with the phone.
The receptionist.
I know. Yeah, it's just, it's someone's full-time job to take these calls.
Probably.
All right. Yeah, we got roll up and kick my feet out. This shit was for a ticket, man. I call this shit that free lunch. I tell her how to speed up. She's slow and she can keep up. We know we always out, but somehow they would never see us.
Another game that came out this week is Kingdoms of Amalur:
Reckoning,
developed by one man development team, Ryan Geddes. We actually have a Steam code to give out here for a full copy of the game here. The Steam code is YDGNVQBKNZRQLRD. I'm looking forward to playing.
You should
that
have
game.
Left the last letter off.
You know,
fun
sometimes,
with your keyboard.
Sometimes we do fun stuff like that. But
I'm curious to see how that game sells after a month. Like, I know a lot of people were curious to read about stuff. I'm just curious how it actually does.
It's reviewing all over the map. Kong loved it.
Yeah,
a lot of other places loved it. A lot of places hated it.
It's kind of like EA Partners games have not done well. That's why.
What else has been an EA Partners game?
Bulletstorm
was an EA Partners game.
I thought they did do well, though.
It did okay. Mm-hmm. Who knows how much things sell anymore, because at this point, since MPD is basically out, we basically just rely on a publisher telling us that their game did really awesome. Yeah. So when a game doesn't do so awesome, we just...
I don't even think EA came out and said that, though. Bulletstorm did awesome.
Yeah.
I seem to remember it doing well, but that's just coming off something. Reckoning. I don't know. We'll see. I think there's a lot of interest in fantasy role-playing games coming out of Skyrim, but I don't think it will sell nearly as well as Skyrim.
There hasn't been a lot of advertising for it. I mean, that I've seen. Like, I don't know, outside of like the ad occasionally on our side or whatever.
It's a very pretty game. I mean,
combat is top notch. Like, but I like just playing it. You know what I mean? Like, I really want to just sit down and play it and level up my archery and do all this other crap. And it's so much fun.
100 hours. No time for that with the Star Wars.
I am also enjoying Darkness 2.
Yeah.
Which also came out this week.
Yeah, also a very good
game.
You
reviewed and gave an 8.0, I believe.
8.0 flat.
Yeah. And it's not a very long game, but I've just been taking my time with it. And,
the combat is just really fun. It's like one of the most empowering games I've ever played.
Yeah, it is fun.
You feel like a monster.
I wish there were more executions. Because there's only like...
There's three per type of execution, and it comes out to a total of 12. But
you have to unlock a lot of them,
types, and then what they don't ever really tell you is that depending on where you're looking at on a guy, generally when you tap to grab him, you'll do different execution, because it matters whether you grab him by his foot, his torso, or like the top of him.
Yeah. So anyway, I am enjoying that game. That
Monster.
One's fun.
Monster.
Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
This is Victor.
Victor, I love your burritos.
He's a student of psychology in Sweden.
Burrito psychology.
Oh, Sweden.
Says on a few podcasts ago, you talked about gamers' sense of entitlement.
Yeah.
In concern to Sony, Microsoft, and other companies.
All the used game stuff.
I wanted to point out a fact that we recently discussed in class, and that I hope you will find interesting. During the early teenage years, we first start to develop our own identities. Since this is a whole new way of thinking about ourselves, and because we have no previous information about who we are, we often look towards other strong identities, i.e. brands. It can be a hockey team, a media icon, or very likely a games manufacturer that perhaps is already a big part of your free time. Mm-hmm. That brand then more or less becomes yourself and your whole identity. When the company behind the brand makes decisions you don't agree with, you need to justify the decision to be able to keep a healthy self-esteem, and an attack on the brand is an attack on yourself. This is healthy behavior and is eventually outgrown, but we continue to have a tendency to identify with strong brands and groups, but also our relationships, memories, beliefs, and so forth. So when you think about it, being a fanboy is part of growing up and becoming an adult. We need to latch onto something other than our parents to be able to establish ourselves. Not an excuse, but perhaps an explanation as to why younger gamers so eagerly lash out at you when you suggest changes that they don't like or give a game a negative score.
They probably don't also get any, like, punishment for whatever they say either, so...
What are you saying?
Like, if
I just want, I just want clarification.
Like what the fuck are you saying? What are you trying
to say? Mean to me.
I'm not being mean at all. Greg is the one who's interrupting us. I was wanting you to explain yourself.
I was dramatizing David's statements.
Like the used games thing. They can go on, like IGN, for example, and be like, I hate you, blah, 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 and cuss up a storm because no one's going to, like,
I'm Schizo69 and fuck you and your dumb review.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
That seems like a separate issue, though.
I don't know why you identify with a company, though. What happened to, like, identifying with, like, a president?
So when I was
someone good,
when I was a teenager, I was identifying with bands, you know, like
exactly,
I was like
exactly,
Metallica and Faith No More, and you know, but like, I think that's the same sort of thing.
They get me.
Yeah, but you also identify with like four dudes that are rocking music and doing something that touches you. This is like I identify with Howard Stringer at Sony.
No, that's not
what they're thinking. But they're thinking the PlayStation brand.
Yeah,
you know, that's a really powerful brand to
Xbox,
a lot of people.
Xbox, Halo, stuff like that. DC Comics, right? Like, I hate Marvel. I never grew out of that. Chose DC and I stuck with it. Sega burned me. I left Sega.
I think this is pretty insightful from Victor here.
Thanks, Victor.
It sounds good.
Get back to the burrito kitchen, though.
I will point out, though, that part of becoming an adult is sort of moving past that identification with brands and figuring out who you really are, you know, on your own, aside of any association with companies and products, that sort of thing.
Good one. Good show.
This is Alexander. I was wondering what you guys think of localized release dates. As a gamer living in Europe, it is a source of constant frustration for me when my friend who pirates every game gets to play them 3 or 4 days ahead of me, and I'm paying full price for these titles. All right, first of all, really, 3 or 4 days, is that really a big deal? Like, he plays them a few days before you?
To me, I think it's more like, you know, the people just now getting Catherine six months later. Like, that's something.
That's a different thing.
Yeah, but like 3-4 days.
He goes on, this is more pronounced with Japanese titles, where Western gamers often have to wait weeks and months to play the games. But here, there is the excuse of localization. When a game comes from the U.S. to Europe, there is no need for translation, new voice actors, or anything of the sort. I don't know that that's true. There's a lot of words that are spelled differently, like in England, for one. Do they not translate? Do they not add all those U's into all those words for the UK release?
Or there are probably certain phrases we say that they just don't say that don't make any sense.
So there might be some light localization required.
Yeah.
Which could be the cause for the 3 to 4 day delay.
Oh my God, I need another word for cocked up.
This is Christopher Peterson. A game company, when Square Enix, has released an unfinished game and is now asking fans to pay additional money for the completed product. I think he means Final Fantasy XIII 2.
Yeah.
As a consumer, I've always enjoyed the extra missions, add-ons, and perks of downloadable content packs. But to have a game released that ends in To Be Continued and have that continue come as DLC purchases seems unreasonable and disrespectful. Does the GameScoop crew agree with my premise or want to talk me off the ledge? Definitely not worth killing yourself over.
Yeah. I would be annoyed by it. If Uncharted came out and it didn't end, I'd be annoyed by it. I mean, Final Fantasy, right? Like,
yeah, that's whatever. Yeah, that would never happen with an Uncharted game.
I mean, you figure Prince of Persia did the same thing, remember? Prince of Persia, in the 2008 Prince of Persia, it ended with the credits rolling and you walking, and then they put out DLC that was like a conclusive ending to what happened, which sucked. That was stupid. I played Prince of Persia and I never bought the DLC. I was like, I'm not going to buy this.
Yeah.
I will say that the reason that they'll do it, though, is because this person, for all the legends are going to be on, is that when that DLC comes out, he's going to buy it. And then they're going to release another Final Fantasy, and he's going to buy it. So, you know, vote with your dollars. And Final Fantasy people don't do that. Mm. They just buy everything. And Square wins.
They always win.
Yeah, I don't know. It's I mean, who knows what the hell Square Enix is doing with Final Fantasy these days. Like,
I'm really excited for Final Fantasy XIII-Versus. -2 √
Jorge from Lima, Peru.
Good name.
Yeah.
Good country too.
Talking about this piracy issue again. What do you guys feel about pirating the game, liking it, and then buying it?
Notch supports that, right?
Yeah, Anthony? That's what he said for that one Minecraft guy.
Yeah, Notch does. The guys from Super Meat Boy have said that they don't mind that. I mean, let's be honest. Like, I've done that with music. I've, like, downloaded an album and, like, I like this, and now I'm going to go give them money or buy a shirt or something to, like, support them.
Yeah.
I guess the only issue is that, well, say you pirate a game and then, but you don't like it and then you don't buy it, you know. Were you, that's sort of where the sense of entitlement comes in. Like, like, did you deserve to play it in the first place?
Yeah. I mean, it works like a demo, I guess, but
I would say that it's not a good solution, but at least you're willing to spend money and you're not just pirating everything, which is kind of shitty.
A lot of people don't. A lot of people don't play it and go, oh, I like this, I'll go buy it. You know
what I mean? Yeah, exactly. Most people that pirate just pirate and never spend a dime.
Yar.
That's what they say, too.
Yar, you'll never get my booty.
This is Ryan. My wife surprised me the other week with a birthday/anniversary/Christmas present. I know, I don't think it's going to be as sexy as you think it is. A present of a Vita pre-order.
Yay!
I started thinking about what games I wanted to get at launch. I knew that my first had to be Mod Nation Racers Road Trip. Is that true, Greg?
Imagine the disappointment. Imagine the disappointment he's going to have when he looks back on that.
The main batch of reviews goes live this Monday, the 13th of February. Check it out at 6 a.m.
Maybe
and then throughout the week they go, and you will quickly learn which games you are the must buys.
Let's hope the failure of that system doesn't become an analogy for his marriage when he looks back on it in like 6 years.
Wow.
So you're ready to you know it's going to be a failure.
I hope not, but I can't imagine.
And then how do you
I'm still gonna buy
define
one.
Failure?
Not making money.
So is this going to be a Craig Harris PSP? Oh, the six-year tailspin.
No. The PSP definitely, I don't think, was unsuccessful. Okay. They made money on it.
All right.
It's just if you wanted to do apples to apples, 3DS, it looks
that's
like
that's not going
to
happen. That's not
but
gonna
it's
happen.
Not. No, well, it's dumb. It's dumb to do that, but I don't know. I'm worried that it will not make money.
I think it'll make money. I think it's going to make money. Eventually. Not right away. Just like every Sony system that's ever come
out. I hope so, because Sony stock ain't doing so hot.
Delisted.
But you are...
No, decredited or whatever. Yeah,
not quite delisted.
Sorry, I'm thinking about THQ. THQ.
But you are going to get one.
I'm going to buy one.
Not at launch.
I still might.
Yeah?
I can't make up my mind. I've been hemming and hawing over for like a week now.
3G or Wi-Fi?
I'll probably get a 3G one just because it comes with a memory card and all that.
You
and
make
I have,
money back
and
there.
I have a $50 Best Buy gift card that I can apply towards it.
Look at that.
But then it comes down to what game I'm going to get with it. I really don't know. I Uncharted maybe, but I think that's a game I'm going to play once and never put down. I want something that I can come back to time and time again.
Yeah,
I actually really want to play Hot Shots. It's been years and years since I've played a Hot Shots game.
I was thinking maybe Luminous.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, this is Luminous too.
So
I kind of
pretty good at Luminous.
I kind of want to play some of these Vita games.
Yeah.
Super Stardust.
Yeah. Colin is obsessed.
That's just downloadable only. That's not coming to retail.
$10.
Yeah.
Downloadable only. Yeah.
So I'm going to play that and Hot Shots and Lumines. Disguise 3 is coming. I'll play that again.
All right. You're buying one at launch, too. Come on.
I'm not going
to buy one. Let's walk out at launch to buy one.
Are you going to get one, Tina?
Mm-hmm.
At launch?
Yeah, I'm still debating that. I was talking to Colin about it the other day. And you, Greg, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
If there's a game that'll sell you on it, go ahead. But if not, yeah. Like, if you're just going to hold out for Modern Warfare or whatever, or Call of Duty.
Shut up.
I didn't mean that as an insult at all. No, I just meant if that's like the first game where you're like.
Resistance.
Oh, okay.
There's that too.
Call of Duty actually really appeals to me on a PSP if I can actually play it remotely and on the go and stuff like that and actually play multiplayer games like that with twin sticks on a handheld.
Yeah.
That is appealing to me.
Yeah, Resistance was awesome. So. I know you didn't like it as much as Colin.
I'm not a giant first-person shooter fan, and I think it looked a little barren for what it was doing, but it did feel like a first-person shooter, so that definitely is, like, I'm excited to see what the Call of Duty people do with Call of Duty.
Yeah. No, I want Luminous, and then I also appreciate the fact that I can download Fat Princess on there too.
Yeah,
you like that one?
Of
course you do.
And you like any sort of multiplayer
adversarial game.
Yes.
You like all the games that I don't like.
I like killing people.
Anyway, Ryan's question is, which version of a Vita game gets the developers a bigger cut, the physical copy or the digital version? I would assume the digital, since there would seem to be less cost involved. Do you know or does it matter?
I don't know.
And I think he's thinking about it the wrong way. It's not like developers get a cut of each sale. You know?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, there might be someone might have an agreement like that, but I bet the majority of it is not like that at all. And what you're looking at
Todd Howard might work out a deal with Bethesda,
but
in general.
What you're looking at is long-term success, right? Like, if you put out, Sony Ben's putting out Uncharted, they have a contract to get paid for for the game. Mm-hmm. They get that money, they get the money from Sony, and then Sony goes and makes the money off the game they just bought. But what happens here is that Sony factors in how many copies Uncharted sells. So if Uncharted sells 1 million copies or whatever, or 2 million, what do you know? I mean, they come back to Sony Ben and give them more projects and make them more money.
Yeah.
It's when you don't support when you take a used game, you don't buy a game, and whatever your reasoning for it is, that's when Sony looks at it and goes, oh, this game didn't sell that well. We're not going to give them another game. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't prove themselves in this title or whatever. Mm-hmm.
What's the price difference between a digital copy and, like,
it's all ranging right now. It's like
I think it's like $5.
Yeah, like 10%, something like that. Yeah, yeah. As far as buying it digitally,
so
over
retailers probably wouldn't like that at all.
Exactly. I mean, that's the whole thing, right? GameStop is still GameStop, and they need to play ball with them in a way. And so that's what you're getting around right now.
So get whichever version you prefer.
Yeah, I mean,
Ryan,
if you're, how big of a memory card do you want to get? That's the big thing. Like, I do not want to carry cartridges around, like I said. So, like, I already bought a 16 gigabyte card. I'm probably going to buy a 32 gigabyte card as well. See, can I trade those? I might try to trade that in. There you go. Take my used memory card. I don't want it anymore.
So I love the PSP Go for that.
I don't want to support that.
But no games on that thing.
Well, there's PSP games.
Ah, the PSP Go.
I remember you just have to buy the PSP games you already had. Mm-hmm.
You ordered that the last time we were in Japan.
Did I order
like from our
Japan?
From our hotel room? You like got on Amazon and ordered your PSP Go.
I'm so cute.
Yeah.
A lot of memories.
I know, right? This is Evan Johnson. He wants to know: do you ever feel bad for developers?
Yes.
I've been reading reviews for Neverdead.
Yes.
For Neverdead, I feel bad for Rebellion. I'm sure these people are smart based on their previous projects like Sniper, World at War, Star Wars Battlefront, but this one didn't seem to work out for them. You guys speak to developers a good bit. How do you reconcile doing your job with maintaining friendships and business relations?
People understand that it is a business relationship. They understand if you become friends with a developer, which I have in the past, or like somebody who's working on games or whatever. Not like, mm-hmm. I'm not calling Todd Howard. We're not going jet skiing. I like how we're mentioning Todd Howard.
I would go jet skiing with Todd Howard.
I would do anything with Todd Howard.
You know what's awesome about Todd Howard is that he loves Battlefield. Sorry, keep going.
That's fine. No, but I mean, they understand what the job is. Like, no, nobody, if you, the whole thing about a review, right, whether a fan likes it or not, is, are your arguments based in reality? Like, if you say this game sucks, here's X, Y, and Z, why it sucks. If you make your point, they're not going to argue. They can say, I don't agree with you. Like, I don't have those problems with the game. I don't think that. When you get into, like, so as long as you're giving a fair and honest review and an accurate review, they can't argue that. You know what I mean? Like, they can say that I don't agree with you on these, like, what you took away from the story or why you didn't like the controls, but I see where you're coming from is usually what you get.
Mm-hmm.
And now, it's when you totally, like, this didn't have this, and they're like, it did have this. It totally has that option. Why didn't you see it buried in this menu? But I mean, like, that's when it gets down to the fact of, like, apples to oranges kind of an argument.
That being said, people do have to be careful to maintain professional distance, which everyone in this room knows. It's like there's been times in my life even that I've been, like, really good with a certain PR person that I've been like, ah, oh, they're going to be really sad about this. And I'm like, I know I shouldn't even care about that, but, you know.
Well, that's usually a sign, like, you take yourself off the project, right? Like, if you are working on something with them and stuff, and or you feel like, you know, that something along the lines would, like, if you're having that conversation, usually, if I'm having that conversation in my head, it's usually when I'm like, well, I should pass this on.
From my experience, when I tell them, like, if a game's good or not, they usually agree. They're like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the other thing, too.
Yeah, that's the thing.
The developer knows.
Yeah, a lot of times the developer knows that they're...
I'm sorry.
And usually it's when they're working for bigger publishers.
Yeah.
You know, and they kind of know that, you know, what they're making.
Going back to the question, right, that's when I feel bad for developers. Like, when they put out a bad game or when they're demoing a bad game, they know it's bad. They haven't drank Kool-Aid to, like, brainwash them.
Yeah.
But they can't, you know, they've invested 3 years, 2 years of their life, whatever. They can't sit there and shelf that project now and say, like, well, we're just going to take the $600,000 loss on whatever it was. You know what I mean? They are a developer making a product for a publisher. Mm-hmm. And so even if now it's off the rails and it's bad, they still have to put it out.
That being said, Rebellion, you know, you were like naming off games that you thought were good by them. Let's not forget they made Rogue Warrior. Just want to put that little
one awesome
back
game
in your mind.
Rogue Warrior, whatever you want. That's a great bad game. That's a great B-movie. Suck on my balls. Choke on him and die.
I remember that.
Everyone right now, go YouTube the Rogue Warrior end credits song.
Yeah, please do.
Who was the actor?
Mickey Rourke.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's amazing. Our last email comes from Timothy Johns. He wants to know cats versus dogs.
I've met this guy, I believe.
Cats versus dogs. Discuss. Okay. He says.
When have you met him?
I met him at an anime convention in San Jose. Timothy Johns. I distinctly remember he listened to GameScoop and he talked about it.
Look at that! It all came back.
So,
Well, in the Greg Miller journey of life. It began with cats, and the dogs sucked.
You had a cat named Gizmo?
I had many cats. I had a cat named Gizmo, Cuddles, and Tigger.
Cuddles.
Wow, I like
cats simply because they're lower maintenance.
Now,
but
let Greg finish his story. He was going somewhere with this.
And then I got older and I got Bertillo. So I got to see, I've seen how both halves live. And now I live with a cat again with Bertillo as well. And I would say, hands down, I'm a dog person now.
Really?
Just and not because of anything goofy, but like the litter box just grosses me out so much.
Well, okay. So to be fair though, this isn't your cat.
Correct.
Number one.
So I don't clean the litter box.
Yeah.
But I have to smell the litter box. And yeah. I see, nah. And like, but it's like the litter gets, and I remember when I had cats and the litter would get like, you know, it tracks out a little bit. Like yeah, there'll be little rocks
happens,
and stuff.
That
and
happens.
Like, instead, that grosses me out.
There's also like better types of litter you can get.
Totally. Yeah.
Instead,
yeah,
instead you have Bertillo who just likes to pee on the floor when anyone says hi to him before he pees.
Now you see, that's funny that you say that. He doesn't like to pee on the floor. It's a medical condition. He's not doing it because he enjoys it. Such a fucking jerk to him.
Bully.
And anyways, no, and as long as you ignore Bertillo, you're fine. He doesn't pee on the floor.
But Anthony, you were saying
cats vomit too.
No, so cats are lower maintenance, which is one of the reasons I like them. But cats never greet you like a dog does.
That's not
true. You make you feel like a million bucks. Okay, they very rarely do.
Jackie Brown does.
Okay, well,
I
most
think your cats,
cats
kind of mean.
Most cats do not. But I do like the cats have a lot of personality. But one thing I'll say is I was reading an article last night, and everyone should go do some research about this. But there are protozoan
homework.
There are protozoan life forms found in cat feces that they believe get into people's brains and alter, and their research is starting to come out that they believe it alters people's behavior.
In what way?
In a negative
way, like,
right?
In the sense that they know in mice, it makes mice, it takes over parts of the mice's brain and makes them run towards the cat so they get killed and eaten, because that's where it breeds in the gut. And their theory is now that the same protozoan in humans, because we share enough DNA with mice, makes us do dumb things like almost get hit by cars and stuff and just be reckless.
What?
So
what?
Just putting that out there. Next time I'm in a meeting and I'm just like, what? Fuck all you guys.
It's
cat,
just because you're
cat protozoans, of course.
Hmm.
So
does that help explain like cat ladies?
Yeah, maybe. So
Damon, your cat's up through and through.
Well, no. So I love both cats and dogs. But from where I am in my life right now, like mm-hmm. Anthony says, cats are so much less maintenance.
Totally. Yeah. That's a major point, yeah. That they're like, Bertillo does totally restrict me. Like, I have to go home and I have to, I have to lean on somebody or whatever. Blah, blah,
if we want to go get drinks after work, Jackie Brown will be fine until whenever I get home. You know? Yeah.
That being said, I can never leave the house with my cat.
Yeah, that's true too.
We can never just
When we went to the park that weekend, it would have been nice if I could bring Jackie Brown, but you can't do that.
I don't know. There's some people that walk cats in San Francisco.
That's true.
But San Francisco has a lot of weirdos.
Yeah.
So I like both cats and dogs. When I have like a family and a house someday, I'll totally have dogs too, for sure.
Wiener dogs?
Maybe.
Yeah. I'll come over.
I know Tina wants a dog.
A dog really bad. I've had dogs my entire life with my parents. I always had big dogs. In high school and college, I had a golden retriever.
But just by default, Tina, you will be a dog person and not a cat person because your husband does not.
He's allergic
to cats. Mm-hmm. So
and he eats them.
I do love the big fat orange cats with like green eyes.
Yeah,
I don't know why they're so funny.
And Jackie Brown does come to greet me when I come home.
Yeah, mine does too, but only in the sense that like feed me or else I'll hurt you. So.
I went to the SPCA the other day with Scott Lowe, our tech editor here.
To get his cat?
To get his cat. And when I was looking at the cats, I saw a huge one with, like, nubby legs only because he was so fat. And he just kind of, like, laid on his side and just stared at people. Like, he did not even move when the door opened, so they kind of had to
push him?
Yeah, like, push him with, you know, their toe. Just, to, like, shove him out of the way, and he just kind of laid there.
Animals are funny.
That's awesome. Yeah.
They're great.
All right.
Well, I think that's all the scoops we have for you this week. Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Tina, for joining us.
Yeah.
Are you gonna come back, or do you hate this podcast?
No, I will. I didn't know the rules. And to be fair, my mom was telling me
doesn't
how
matter.
To sit my
it doesn't matter. It could be Jesus texting you that the rapture is upon us.
Jesus.
The mass text from Jesus. That would be awesome. I hope that's how he comes back. What's up, bros? Back. Rapture and shit.
And thank you, Anthony.
I'd be good to one another. That's my catchphrase now.
That's your catchphrase?
Yeah, be good to one another.
But you say it at the end of the show, not at the beginning?
Whenever.
Okay.
Just the middle of the show, you're going to blur that. Well, I got the protozoans in me. I don't know what I'm going to say.
Our closing song this week is for you fans of the movie Drive, or at least its soundtrack. This is the Hood Internet with a mashup called Night Chain. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out. Yeah, we got roll up and kick my feet out. This shit was for a ticket, man. I call this shit that freelance. I tell her how to speed up. She slow and she can keep up. We know we always out, but somehow they would never see us. Keep the go, change, hoes changed. I didn't. They say carrots up no vision, but somehow it made them. Listen, no, this ain't silver. This is my dilemma. Arrogant when I finish. I came from humble beginnings. So it's nothing to finish. And put my 100% in. Put my pride in the pen. Couldn't modify your opinion. Try to give them light in a message.
is, but you rather have some fucking BBSs. She say I'm charming and I meant it, but she was talking about my pendant. I got Gucci on that, came back with 30 chains. Now she a 10 of, I bet she listen to everything. Straight Gucci on her, came back with 80 chains. Now the silly bitch is calling me like every day. Say the bras gon' follow.
Chain so big, can't pop my cover.
Silly bitches gon' follow.
Chain so big, can't pop my cover.
Say the bras gon' follow.
Chain so big, can't pop my cover.
Getting easy on them, straight easy on them. You talking crazy, best believe they gon' see it, don't it? Easy on them, straight easy on them. Let's keep it G, nobody see you when you being humble. Look. So stingy with my Johnny, but why it open when a nigga get the shiny? I was hoping you would notice when my mind had put money in the book. I bet these bitches wouldn't find it. Look, okay, this chain music. If I got them lame to do it, you change too, with your brain has been way too influenced. I've been dope, cold nigga, show nigga. But where I'm from, it ain't no love for no broke nigga. She need that easy shit. Amen to church, sis. Pray to whoever got on the biggest of crucifix. Lord, Lord, forgive us. Personalities clash and my license is suspended. So I hide it while I'm spending. Did I get y'all attention? She can't escape the chain. Shout out to Mrs. Tubby. Shout out to Maybach Music. My logic is getting money, spitting something real. And let the people know it's still like a chain flow. Johnny Cage chain flow. Dirty dang, bam, ball of six bottles. Talk with such expensive slang. I got Gucci on her. Now they know this nigga. So who that chain change? It ain't both of us, nigga. I got Gucci on her. Came back on her chains. And now these Gucci motherfuckers on. I know my name. Bras gon' follow.
Chain so big, can't pop my collar.
Bet the niggas gon' follow.
Chain so big, can't pop my collar.
Get easy on her, straight easy on her. You talking easy, best believe they gon' see ya, homie. Easy on her, straight easy on her. Take you to G, don't nobody see you. Bras gon' follow.
Chain so big, can't pop my collar.
Hold up. Silly niggas gon' follow. Bras gon' follow.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.